Field from the Lyman Historical Society. I'm here today with Robert Bob Lester Perry to conduct an interview for Voices of Lyman. We're in the community room at the Lyman Town Hall, and Michelle Felicetti is here to record and transcribe the interview. So without further ado, Bob, we're going to start with your growing up years. What's your date of birth and where were you born?
I was born July 18th, 1945. We lived in Lyman. I was born at the Saco Osteopathic Hospital.
So your parents were living in Lyman when you were born?
When I was born, my father was overseas fighting the war.
He was.
My mother and I were living with my grandmother on Route 111 in Lyman.
And your grandmother's name?
Rita Hill.
Rita Hill.
Yes.
Okay.
They used to operate the corner store at the Pond Road and 111.
Yeah, I know Arthur knew Rita and...
Clint
Hill, yeah. Okay, so your dad was overseas in World War II.
World War II, yes.
When you were born. So you were living with your grandparents. What was it like as a child growing up? You grew up in Lyman. What did you have for, like, say, for chores, or what did you do for activities when you were growing up?
Growing up, basically all I did was play ball.
Ball, baseball?
We all had chores back then, and for a while we had a small farm, and, you know, we had pigs and cows and horses and a lot of room to roam and, you know, and play ball. And
now, was the farm on 111, or are you talking about
No, the farm was on the Troutbrook Road, which is on the Arundel-Lyman line.
Okay,
and other than the barn, there was a dance hall. My parents ran dances on Saturday nights, and my sister and I on Sundays would pick up the change around the, you know, where people would buy their hot dogs and sodas, and was able to save a little money doing that, you know.
So is that place, the dance hall, on your property, or?
Yes, it was. It was near the Harrison Farm, which is on the corner of the Hill Road and the Troutbrook Road.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, my father owned 400 or 500 acres there. He owned all of that property there, and I can't imagine the value of it today if he had kept it. But he bought that on a GI loan within a few months after he got out of the military, and I guess just farming wasn't into his blood, you know. So we moved to different places after that.
All in Lyman? Yeah. I know.
Including the house right across from Cousin Memorial School.
Oh, you lived there as well?
We lived there, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, which was great because the ball field was right across the road.
Yeah.
And then my father built where my sister lives now, you know.
Right there on 35.
Right on 35.
That red house on 35,
yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Built that in the late 50s.
In the late 50s.
Yeah.
And then you subsequently built a house next door.
I did, after I got out of the military in 1974. I built that, yes.
74? Okay, so you were born in Lyman, you were born at the Osteopathic Hospital in Saco, and you lived in Lyman. You grew up in Lyman. So you must have, based on your age, you attended Cousins Memorial School.
I did, K through 9.
K through 8, exactly.
Yeah.
K through 8?
Yes.
Yeah. So how'd you get to school? Where were you? Well, you moved
well,
around.
Well, initially...
I mean, one time it was... You went across the road, right?
Yes. But one time, in kindergarten through perhaps the second or third grade, and I'm guessing on that, I would walk from the Troutbrook Farm to what is now Ashley's Restaurant.
Yeah.
It used to be owned by the Wileses. Minnie Wiles was her name. I forget the gentleman's name. And then we would be picked up in a station wagon and taken to school. And then after school, the same station wagon would take us there. But it was, you know, when people talk about walking to school, you know, through snow and such. That was me,
yeah.
You know, and just 6 or 7 years old, and it was a good half mile.
Well, I'm sure, I mean, that's on 111 you were walking. It probably wasn't quite as busy back then, but
well, there
still
was no traffic at all.
No traffic.
No.
Yeah.
Les Wiles owned that store, and Les Wiles.
Now, was it a store or a restaurant when...
No, it was just a little convenience store. Yeah. You know, you could buy alcohol, you know, beer, cigarettes, you know, chips and pastries and candy and, you know, that type of
yeah.
thing.
So you mentioned that, now I can't think of his name. Are there classmates that you can recall from your cousin's school days?
Oh, certainly. And most of us went through the 9 years together, including like Eric Boyden, who still lives in town, mm-hmm. and Phil Daniels, who grew up right next to the general store. He lives just on the Thompson Road in Arundel. The others have moved away, I guess, but some have died.
I know there's a Stephen Daniels who lives in Crystal, Maine, and he lived across
the
road.
That was Phil Daniels' brother. He was yeah. a year ahead of us in grammar school.
And he became a member of the Historical Society,
yes,
so
that's
he
right.
keeps up to date with what's going on.
That's right.
With the Historical Society. Any particular... elementary school memories that you'd like to share?
The only thing I remember basically, and it's my own opinion, was that the teachers we had, and there were four women, or three women.
Can you name them?
Yes, Alice Elwell, Edith Goodwin, they were sisters, and Dora Murphy. They were more concerned about discipline than they were teaching us anything.
You think?
And I think others might say the same thing. I mean, they had no issue putting a hand on the desk and putting a ruler to us, you know. But you didn't go home and talk about it because the same thing would have happened there.
Yeah.
Unlike today where you can't discipline anybody. But when I went to high school, I realized about being educated there was that I thought I was... quite a bit behind those that at Kennebunk High School, you know, that had gone through the Kennebunk system.
So you feel like you didn't get as much as you should have in elementary
and
school?
Probably most of that was my fault because I was, you know, interested in playing ball and, you know, waiting for, I think 3 o'clock was the end of the day back then just to be able to get outside and do something.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you went to Kennebunk High School.
I did.
From
1959 to 63.
I know I was doing some research on Ancestry, and I came across your senior yearbook. And there are plenty of pictures of Bob Perry participating in all kinds of sports. You were into baseball, football, basketball.
I played all three major sports,
yeah.
yes.
And which is your favorite?
Well, whichever season it was. You know, if it was football season, football was my favorite. I quarterbacked the football team in 61 and 62. And in 62, we won whatever the championship was back then. And I would say baseball, I had more fun playing.
You were the pitcher?
Originally, the last 2 years I pitched, the first year I played third base as a freshman, and we won the championship that year, and the coaches gave me the most valuable player as a freshman, which I was awed by that. If you know the gym at Kennebunk, the old gym, and how the seniors would sit together and the juniors and the freshmen way in the far corner from where they were presenting these awards. And when the coach mentioned something about doing some research and they couldn't find where a freshman on a championship team had ever won the most valuable player. And then they mentioned my name and I had to walk all the way down the bleachers and diagonally across the gym. I was nervous as could be, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, what an award, as a freshman. I mean, it's because you enjoyed the sport so much. And you wanted it, you gave your all.
And, you know, in Lyman, there was never enough people to play ball. You know, if you could get one or two others, you know, you would pitch, they'd hit it, and you'd go chase it, and if they hit it too far, you start crying because, you know, he's better than I am. And, and that was the first game I played in high school was the first organized baseball game I ever played in, or any organized sport that I ever played in. Little League was not a thing in Lyman, you know, or certainly not Pee Wee football or any organized games at all back then.
Yeah, even when I went to Cousins, there was no organized sports. No. It was, you know, whatever group you get together to play whatever were interested in doing.
Yeah, we'd play it, and we always had a recess, I think, around 10 o'clock in the morning for 15 minutes, and, you know, we'd run out and play a little ball when the weather was such we could, and then we had an hour lunch break, and we always played ball there. That was basically the only time we were able to do that.
So you graduated from Kennebunk in 63.
In 1963.
And then did you go to college?
I did go to college. I went to the University of Maine in Presque Isle from 63 to 68. It took me another semester, other than the 4 years.
And what did you major in?
Physical education, health and physical education.
So that's sort of a fit with, you know, your...
Oh, it did, and I loved it, you know.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk a little bit, unless there's something else you want to mention around your childhood or our school days.
The only thing I would talk about would be college days, where Presque Isle is... Well, it was like 350 miles up there, and oftentimes we would hitchhike it, and I could write a book about stories that...
And who's we?
Well, my roommate and I. He lived in Falmouth, right next to the turnpike, and I'd usually get a ride to the turnpike where his house was, or get off, and then we'd jump down on the pike and hitchhike to Presque Isle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 43 below one night in Lincoln when we were up there.
Oh, my. Wow. You must have really liked going to Presque
Isle. Well, I mean, I liked coming home, rather than spending...
And so that was the price you paid.
There weren't many people up there. There was very little to do, and, didn't have any transportation at the time, Mm-hmm. So the thumb was the way to go.
Wow. You wouldn't want to do that these days.
They wouldn't let you do it,
No. Okay, so I'm going to move on to your family. Were either of your parents born in Lyman?
My father was born in Lyman, yes.
And your father, Lester?
Lester.
Lester Harding Perry.
Yes. Yeah.
And your mother, Elgina?
Yes.
She was named after her dad, correct?
Name was Algie, so yeah.
They called her Ginny, correct?
Ginny, right.
But her name was Elgina.
Right.
Vines. What were your parents like? Were they strict disciplinarians?
They were strict, but they were fair. I think that's the way a lot of parents were back then. They made sure that my sister and I, Sandra, had responsibilities, and I think that helps one when they get older to understand that there are certain things you need to do, right?
Right.
And not shirk those responsibilities.
So did you get in trouble much when you were...
No, younger? I was playing ball all the time.
Well, that's good.
I had no propensity to get into trouble. If I had time on my hands, it might have been a different story,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you have a sister, a younger sister.
I do, yes.
And a name?
Sandra.
Sandra. Is she your only sibling?
She is, yes.
Now, does Sandra live near you?
Close, yes. She lives in the parents'... The house that they built in 59 on...
That red house on,
yes.
on 35, that's
right.
Where Sandra lives?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just And I know this because Arthur and I celebrated ours. You and Judy celebrated your 50th wedding anniversary.
We did in September of this year.
September.
Yeah, September 10th.
Now, Judy isn't from around here.
Judy's from Old Orchard.
Old Orchard. So how did you and Judy meet?
Well, I was in the military. I was drafted during the Vietnam War. I call it a conflict. Not that I went over there. And when I was on leave, her aunt was going out with Everett Moores, who lived next to us and didn't have a date New Year's, and asked me if I would, you know, go with him and, you know, and meet his, which would be his niece sooner or later. So I said sure, and that's how we met on a blind date, with her mother and father and aunt and uncle.
Okay. Now, how many children do you and Judy
have? We have three.
You have three. And their names?
Gannon, who's will be 50 in February, and Christine and Marissa.
And do they, any of them live near you?
Oh, they all live nearby. We see them almost every day.
Do any of them live in Lyman?
Marissa does. Gannon lives in Old Orchard, and Christine lives in Waterboro.
In Waterboro. Now, do you have any grandchildren?
Have three grandchildren. Hunter, junior in high school at Massabesic. Jonathan is at Thornton, the Thornton system. And Ella goes to a school in Saco.
A school in Saco?
Yes.
Okay, now we're going to move on to work. Do you remember what your first job was?
Well, believe it or not, it was the Jackson's Corner store, which they just tore down a couple days ago. And as I saw that go down, I had mixed feelings because I think I was 12 and I made $20 a week. And I would pump gas, mow the lawn there, and keep the driveway clean of things. And just help the lady that ran it, you know.
Do you remember who ran it at that
time?
Ann
and Calvin Day. It was just, the front of it had like six stools where people could get a hot dog or a hamburger and a bag of chips. And the rest of it was their residence.
And that,
that would have been in, you know, late in the 50s.
Late 50s.
Yes. When gas was like 18 cents a gallon.
Yeah. And $20 a week, that seems like a pretty decent paycheck for a 12-year-old.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I tell people that at 12, I was making $20 a week. And at 24, when I was drafted into the Army with a college education, I was making $18 a week. Crazy, huh? That was a crazy time.
Yeah. Okay, so I know, and through experience, that you've done masonry work for my husband and I. You've been a mason for 40 years.
Yeah, if we could go back a little bit. When I got out of college, and you talk about employment, I got a job at Camden Rockport High School teaching physical education. I taught there for 2 years, and I coached the varsity baseball team, the varsity soccer team, and the JV basketball team. And, I had a new car, new Mustang. I had a nice apartment, right? I had a good job, and I was making some money, but I got drafted. I was single, so I got drafted, and, of course, I lost the job. And went into the Army for 2 years, and when I got out, I did different things, and then I got into the masonry business, and that's been my career for like 40 years.
And I'd say maybe you're semi-retired. I know you work almost daily.
Yeah,
with your
I still.
Gannon.
When my son needs help, I work with him, which is almost every day if the weather is good.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I know I've seen you show me pictures of some of the things that you've done, walkways.
A lot of stonework, and we do today you know, patios are fashionable, the brick pavers, and we do a lot of that. It's heavy work.
Yeah.
But, you know, it keeps me in shape, and there again,
I
had the propensity to get into trouble. This keeps me out of it.
Okay, we're going to move on to civic volunteer activities. I understand that you were the president of the Massabesic Athletic Boosters for 11 years.
I was for a number of years. When the kids started going to high school, I got involved in the first meeting I went to. I left as president of it. there was a change in what was going on, and I think I found that we had $5 to work with.
$5.
That was it, and I found that in one of those blue bank bags, you know, but. Not only my effort, but effort of a lot of people. I mean, we were able to spend $120,000 to put lights on both fields up there.
Wow.
We built dugouts for the boys and girls baseball and softball teams and concession stands. And we were able to pay off a $50,000 note to help put lights on the field in 18 months. That's through, I'd gone to the school board and told them I was willing to borrow the money myself on a personal note if the boosters could have the gate receipts as long as it took to pay that loan back off. Now, in the 18 months, it was like $8,000 of accrued interest, so that was like a $58,000 loan, but through gate receipts, and the football team was doing really well that 2 or 3 years. I mean, we were taking in $6,000-$7,000 on a football game, but it would take like 40 parents, you know, to sell 50-50 tickets and to flip burgers and popcorn and french fries, and it took an effort, but during that time, we did a lot for the school up there. You know, we put in backstops, we put in fences, and we did a lot inside with scoreboards. And at one time when the school budget was a difficult thing, we bought uniforms for most of the athletic teams. And it was fun doing it. I can remember Judy telling me, or asking me, after I had finished my tenure up there, and that's when the kids were out of school. She says, "How come we seem to have a little bit more money now than we've had in the past few years?" And I said, "Well, I'm working. I'm not up to the school every day, you know."
Yeah.
But I would go up like during basketball season. I'd go up before the kids got out of school, and I'd fill the halls with popcorn smell, right? And the kids would buy candy and popcorn and hot dogs after school, and they all seemed to have 10s and 20s on them, you know. So anything to pay back that loan and, you know, to make the facility, the Class A facility, it's tough to stay up with some of these other schools, you know, which have, we're so rural up there, it's difficult, you know, unlike the cities where the kids are able to play together all the time. It was interesting. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, well, I think they were lucky to have.
And
you
I have a plaque, that thanked me for my services up there from the school itself. You know,
nice.
I don't think they'll ever name a football field after me up there or any facility, but I don't want them to. I just did it because the kids were there, and look, I had taught physical education, and I had coached this, you know, high school. And it brought me back to those days, and I enjoyed doing it. And, mm-hmm. You know, to be with that type of kid that's, you know, goes to school and afterwards is out there putting the extra effort in to play ball. And I just wanted them to have the best facilities and equipment that they could have.
Yeah, and I'm sure you related to them in that regard.
I think so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. Now, the ball field that's next to Cousins Memorial School. Were you involved in the building of that field?
I helped build the dugouts.
The dugouts?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier, a lot of the dugouts in this part of the county, I've got my hand involved in most of them. The Massabesic girls and boys that I had mentioned earlier. I helped the Arundel Rec Department build their masonry dugouts years and years ago. And you mentioned the Cousins School as well as the Babe Ruth Field near the library. Leo LaCourse was the manager ran that program, and he asked me. He said, "I got the block, so I did both of those dugouts."
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you do what you can to support whatever sports are available.
Yeah, not only sports. I've helped, Cousins School, their playground out there. You know, we had a number of volunteers who helped put in, swings and slides and whatever was involved in, what
getting the kids
playground.
Outside.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Basketball courts and such.
Yeah. Now, you touched on that you were drafted and went into the military. What branch of the military?
I was drafted into the Army in August of 1969.
Which was shortly after you graduated from college.
Yeah, and I didn't know I was going to be drafted. The superintendent came around that spring, and he said to me, "Bob," he says, "I'd like to give you a contract for the following year, but Selective Services gotten in touch with us, and you're going to be drafted." Oh. Now, that was the first I heard about it, right?
Wow.
What a shock.
Yeah.
So, that in July sometime, I got a nice letter from President Nixon congratulating me on being drafted, and so late in August, I ended up at Fort Campbell, Kentucky for basic training.
That's where you did your basic training in Kentucky?
Yeah, and I was, after a couple of weeks, there were 252 of us in our company, and the drill instructor came up to me one day and said, "I like what you're doing, I want you to be the trainee field first of this company." So, in essence, I was a trainee that ran 251 other trainees, which meant I had to get up about an hour earlier every morning. We always had lack of sleep, but in doing so, I got the leadership award, and
so it was you were a physical activity specialist.
I was a physical, yes. And initially, I was in the infantry, and I left Fort Campbell to go to Fort Polk, Louisiana, for advanced infantry training. I was in mortars, and they told you have what's called a 201 file, which is your record and your health records and etc. And in it, I am partially colorblind. Somebody noticed that when I was processing into that infantry company and told me I could not be in the infantry. So they sent me to a holdover company and ended up at the post field house where they needed someone. Probably the best job in the Army. I really lucked out,
Well, it sounds like because it was physical activities that it was line with what...
In doing so, I was able to travel the Southwest playing ball. Baseball, soccer, I coached the post soccer team, and I was assistant coach on the post basketball team, and played every sport on the post that there was, and was in charge of getting the fields and facilities ready for games, and worked in the field house, designating people to clean and such. Pretty decent job for the military.
Yeah, well, it sounds like what you were training for. Really.
And that seldom happens in the Army. If you're good at one thing, they make sure you do something else.
So you had mentioned you received an award for your services.
I did, after basic training, the top trainee in that company.
The leadership.
Leadership award, yeah. Yes. And then, you know, I have that plaque at home. It's like a 8x6 little plaque. And I've got a number of trophies from other sports, but oftentimes I thought I got those trophies from other sports because I was personable, I think, and the coaches liked me rather than being the best player. But that one, I didn't know who it was that gave it to me, but that was from achievement, all achievement, you know, not who you were. So that little plaque meant more to me and still means more to me than any of the other trophies. I, like in high school, I got they call it a prestigious sportsmanship award, which I won at the senior, you know, banquet, the outstanding sportsmanship. And I cherish that, but, you know, they probably are pretty equal, you know. Huh. It sounds like I'm just patting myself on the back, but you're asking the questions, and I'm trying to be as truthful as can be.
That's right. And I think these are things that, you know, we want to have on the record. Were there any close relatives of yours who, you mentioned earlier that your father was stationed overseas during World War II.
Yes.
Were there any other relatives that were in the service?
My grandfather, Heinz, on my mother's side, was in the trenches of World War I. And to go back even further than that, two grandparents, one being a great-great and the other being a great-great-great, were both in the Civil War in the 27th Maine.
Wow.
And keep in mind, there was only one award that was given for valor back then, and they both came home with a Congressional Medal of Honor.
That's impressive.
Well, impressive in the sense that their time was up, and Lincoln asked the 27th Maine if they would stay and guard Washington, D.C. There were 900 and some odd men in the regiment, and 120 or so stayed, the two of them being, you know, two of the 100 and whatever. And he told them that if they stayed and helped protect the Capitol in Washington, D.C., that they would get an award. And like I said, it was a Congressional Medal of Honor, so that's how that happened.
And do you remember?
And I have all of the documentation of that.
And I think you shared it.
Yeah, and with the Historical Society, they have that information.
Now, do you recall the gentlemen's names?
I do. One was George Washington Gordon. Of course, the Gordon family's been in the area since the early 1800s. And the other one was George Washington Emmons.
Really?
Yes. And one is buried right at the corner of Lord's Lane and the Pond Road, the Emmons. And the other one is buried at the Gordon Cemetery on Lord's Lane. So they're only 100 yards apart right now.
Yeah.
And to go along with that, my mother's brother, which I'm... told the story about.
And that's what I was just going to ask you, if you wouldn't mind sharing that story.
Was a Marine in World War II. He had been in a number of the battles, and he was captured by two Japanese soldiers on Okinawa. And he was the last Marine to come off Okinawa. They found him in a cave. He had amnesia. Luckily for him, that's probably the only reason he survived. They pulled all of his toenails out. They pulled all of his fingernails out. Bruises all over him. But I think what's amazing is he came out of that, got home, and he married a girl out in San Francisco, and they raised. You know, he had a good life. So personable, you know. He played golf. He just loved everybody. Everybody loved him, and He was just a fantastic guy. I'm sorry that I only was with him maybe four or five different times, but yeah, he was quite a guy.
And his name was George?
George. George Hines, yes.
I know that's an amazing story. I know when you shared it, it was emotional at the...
Well, it was emotional for me to even mention it now, you know?
Yeah.
I know that my mother was out there when he passed, and the coroner asked my mother if his wife was a beater. You know, did she beat him? Because his body was marked with the wounds, stab wounds probably, and whatever else from his confinement with those two Japanese soldiers back in 1944, I guess it was.
Now, so he lived out in California, or...?
He was in Lyman when he was when he went enlisted in the Marines.
So he was a Marine.
And he stayed out on the West Coast. And I asked him one time, and this is kind of a personal thing, I asked him why he never came back to Maine. He came back when his mother, father passed, my grandparents. He said, Bob, he says, I was sick of going to bed too hungry. Too many nights I went to bed hungry, you know.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that story. Anything else you want to mention as far as military, family?
No, I don't know. You know, I think that's basically it. Okay. It's like some families have generations that just hit it right. They all have to go to war.
Yeah.
And others hit it perfectly, and they don't have to. You know, it's strange how that works, you know.
Yeah.
I was a little dismayed with the Vietnam era and how unfair to me that seemed, where I know any number of people my age and kind of in the same circumstance never even got a draft notice, you know, and so they were able to continue their occupation and...
Uninterrupted.
Yeah. Yes, uninterrupted and making a decent pay when, like I said, when I first went in the Army, I was making $18 a week. $72 a month, and then you had to pay for your haircut every week, and you know, your equipment to keep everything shined up, your boot polish and shoe polish, and so you didn't have any money. You didn't have any extra money to send home.
No. Next, I'd like to touch on the 47 fire. I realized that you were quite young when the fire swept through York County and the town of Lyman. Was there any effect on your family or your neighbors?
The farm on the Davis Road, where my great-grandparents lived, burnt. And we were, this was soon, I don't remember any of this. It's
right.
Just from what I've been told.
Yeah.
We were living on 111 where I was born. And we left that house when the gas pumps at Jackson's Corner blew. So my mother and, of course, my father was fighting the fire. My mother and grandmother took me to my grandparents' house in Biddeford, where we spent the duration of the fire. And luckily, the house that we were in did not burn. So we were able to go back to that. I don't know how long we were, you know, in Biddeford.
Right. You were real small then.
Yeah, I was only a couple of years old. So I don't remember, yeah. Other than what, you know,
what
the stories.
Been told.
Yeah.
Right. So you said your father helped fight the fire. Yeah.
And I often wondered, not only my father, but all of the veterans who had just maybe a year earlier came back from fighting in Europe and over in the, you know, Pacific, and to have this happen to them.
Yeah.
So, to me, those people were a whole lot stronger than I am or most of us today, because there was nothing left. I mean, the teachers at the school taught for a couple of years without any money because the town was broke.
Yeah.
That brings me to the point that I tell most people about the fire, is that, of course, Goodwin's Mills was saved, but if you drove into the country, you saw tar paper shacks, because that's all people could afford.
Yeah.
You know, and some of these housed families with 7, 8, 10 kids. You just wonder how they were able to do that, you know. And everything was flat, no growth at all, you know, just black soot all over the place. And that lasted for a long time. Because I can remember, you know, when I started hunting, you're walking through the woods. I mean, most of the shrubs were like chest high. They were, occasionally there was a tree that survived, but more, you know, it was nothing.
Yeah.
And you could buy land for $25, $50 an acre, but nobody bought it because it wasn't worth anything, you know?
Yeah.
If one realized that 50 years later, things would be different, you know, but yeah, that was a crazy time, I guess.
Well, that was before I was born, but
yeah.
I know that, you know, it swept. My father helped fight the fire as well, and the focus was on Gooner's Mills, the Mills area.
And of course, it was all a volunteer
fire.
You can't call it a fire department if they're all volunteers, but even when I was like, in the 70s, you know, if there was a fire, they'd throw, I'm not on the fire department, but they'd throw one of those Indian tanks on your back, and off through the woods you'd go, just pumping the water out of the fire, you know.
Yeah.
Unlike today, where everything is so organized and, you know, state-of-the-art equipment.
So, next I'm going to move on to changes to the town. You know, We've both seen it. You know, the town has grown and changed significantly over the last several years. How do you see the conduction of town business having changed over the years?
I don't pay too much attention to it. At one time, I was the first rec director that the town had. Of course, it was a non-paying job, and I put up with a lot for no compensation. And back when we were growing up, there was only 400 or 500 people in town. It's had a lot of farmers. It's like everybody knew everybody else. And in 59, when I graduated from Cousins School, there were only 9 of us in the 8th grade, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, back then you knew everybody that was selectmen. I mean, I saw my first tax bill. It was like $58 or $68, you know, in the 70s compared to what it is today. Of course, it certainly costs, you know, a lot more to, you know, like the fire department. That's a, you know.
Do you remember when the fire department was? It was a fire truck, I think. In
well,
Ray
it was
Burbank's
a fire truck and a private, Ray Burbank.
Yeah, and he was fire chief.
Yeah, and he was one that didn't put the pedal to the metal. It would take him, you know, if he went over 15 miles an hour, regardless of how dangerous the fire was, you know, it took him a certain amount of time. My father tells me the story, I barely remember it. We had been in, down Biddeford somewhere, and we turned on the hill road headed towards Goodwin's Mills, and Frank Kimball had a storage garage down there, and it was on fire. So my father, no cell phones back then.
Mm-hmm.
So my father speeds up, and we go to Goodness Mills, tell Ray Burbank about it, right? Rather than take the fire truck down there, he gets into his car, drives down there, and yes, it is on fire. He comes back, and by the time he gets back there, everything's gone.
I know.
So I never got involved too much in the politics. People have often asked me to run for selectman, but being in business, I didn't think it was a good idea to, you know, cross too many paths or people.
Next question, or last question. How important do you think it is to capture and preserve the history of the town?
Well, I think it's quite important for personal reasons. Family on both sides goes, you know, well, on one side, my father's side goes way back. And And the town really doesn't preserve history, and I'll give you a good example. What is now the Schoolhouse Road, where the elementary school is, used to be the Gordon Road, and that's where my ancestors built a house, and it was called the Gordon Road. Well, since then, it's been the Peach Orchard Road, and heavens knows, who's Mr. and Mrs. Peach Orchard, right? So I don't know if there was somebody grew peaches up there, you know, after they had, I don't know if the farm up there burnt and they moved to Lord's Lane, where they built another farm. But to me, these roads should stay the same, so we could always make the connection. Now it's called the Schoolhouse Road. So it's gone from the Gordon Road, which it initially was named, to the Peach Orchard Road, to the Schoolhouse Road. And that's not the only one in town, you know. They keep changing. If somebody builds a house there and their last name is whatever, that's what they want the road to be named, you know. So.
Well, they added a lot of roads over the years.
Well, that's another. If they add a road, that's one thing. But an existing one with an initial why rename it? And I did ask somebody in town one day. Well, because of the, was it 911 or something? They, or something to do with the post office and something to do with, I don't know.
With the fire department, I think, too, as well.
Yeah.
You have to have every road named, but.
But then you go to Dayton, and most of the Gordon family was, some of it was over there. You got the old Gordon Road, then you got the Gordon Road over there. So they stayed, you know, with those names.
I'm not sure who's in charge of changing names or making names.
Right. It seems to me that there are so many other important things to do than to go changing names of, you know, of roads or whatever.
So is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to comment on?
No, I think you've been pretty thorough, you know.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share?
No, as a trustee of the Historical Society, I and you just asked me that question, I think it is certainly important to preserve what history we do have. There's so much that we don't have, but it seems like every now and then we keep getting a little bit more. And if it wasn't for a society like that, that would all be lost, you know.
Oh, I agree.
That would all be lost, and, you know, hopefully it gets to the point where we will have our own building to house all of the materials that we have, and it would be open to people to see it, and perhaps they would find things that, you know, they would donate and for the rest of the people in town to see. Because as we know, so often, you if you don't teach history, it's going to repeat itself, and some of it's bad, you know.
Yeah.
You need to, we need to keep all that information that we can. And I'm lucky that my mother kept so much of things that happened in her childhood and pictures like, you know. That.
And you've been great at sharing them.
Yes.
At our meetings.
Yes, and I'm not good at keeping things, so everything will go to the Historical Society. As I find it.
And I agree that, you know, if we had a place to display what we had, it might incent people to say, geez, I think I've got a box
I think
full
so.
Of
I think that,
things
you know,
that, yeah. And, you know.
And I think we'd get more money from people as well, you know, donations and maybe some town support.
That would be good as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's it. That's all that I have, Bob. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit with me.
Well, thank you. Thank you both.
And if there's something else that, you know, you wanted to cover that we didn't, we can always schedule another interview or we can add, you know, information. So appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.